This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Joe Biden is president-elect, but President Trump refuses to concede and vows legal challenges related to his disputed and unsupported claims of voter fraud. Meanwhile, the Democratic Party is fighting among itself, with its progressive wing blaming moderate members for its loss of seats in the U.S. House and inability to reclaim the Senate. And moderates are returning the fire in kind. Meanwhile, power in the Senate hangs on Georgia, where two runoffs for both the state seats in that upper chamber of Congress are set for January, with a possible result being a 50-50 split. Joe Biden said this election was won for the soul of the nation. So after a tumultuous week and looking at the possible lay of the land, what is that soul telling us? Let's talk about it with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. He's really here with us this time. Ken, welcome back to our program.
Michael, thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
And we also have with us University of Oklahoma, Carl Albert Congressional Research and Studies Center and Department of Political Science Assistant Professor, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, welcome back to our program.
Thanks for having me.
And we want you to join our conversation at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org and let us know what's on your mind during this long election season that appears to not be over completely just yet. We always start when we have the political junkie on with a little bit of trivia. And Ken, what is our trivia question for this episode?
Well, Michael, you know, whenever there's a new president, a new presidential election, there's always great trivia questions that come out of it. Here's one of my favorites. Joe Biden is now only the second Catholic ever elected president, obviously JFK in 1960. And he was also the first Catholic vice president. My question is, ready for this one. Who was the first running mate, the first candidate for vice president who was Catholic?
The first vice presidential candidate who was a Catholic. You can give us a call with your answer at 513-419-7100. If they are correct, Ken, what do they win?
They win the very valuable political junkie button.
Oh, yes. Going for big prices on eBay, I understand.
It is.
All right. Well, Ken, while we wait for our very smart listeners to call in with the correct answer to that question, let's talk about the soul of America. Did we learn anything about the soul of America since Tuesday night?
Well, I think we did. I mean, we learned a lot. And in that, the fact is you had a president, for the most part, who was not interested in uniting the country. You have a president who, for better or worse, did not rise to the occasion with this horrific coronavirus that has infected more and more people, and more and more people by the day. Close to a quarter of a million people have already died. Over 9 million people have been infected, and it's getting worse. And there's still no national response to it, other than saying you could wear a mask if you'd like to. But at the same time, with all this in mind, the president won half the country. I mean, yes, Joe Biden got the most votes than any other presidential candidate in history. Donald Trump got the second most votes of any presidential candidate in history. And so for all the things about Donald Trump, and we've been talking about it on this show forever, about the things he's done, the people he's insulted, the untruths he's said, half the country believes that it was the right path to follow. The conservative judges, the conservative judiciary, the tough trade policies, the foreign policy, the tell it like it is. And so the country is split. I mean, did we learn something? We did. And we learned that one, the polls are not always right. The media is certainly not always right. And the country has still not decided what the future should look like.
Dr. Bloom, it looks like we've elected a Democrat to the presidency, but despite what polls were telling us, the Republicans have retained control of the Senate and surprisingly even picked up seats in the House, though Democrats are still in charge there. What do you think we've learned as a nation about ourselves since Tuesday?
Well, I think one of the key lessons is that the 2016 Trump presidency and his election was not a blip. Or another way to put this is, whatever a lot of people think is wrong with the country, Trump is a symptom and not a cause. So we did not see a return to the landscape of 2012, for example. We saw that even though Joe Biden was able to inspire a lot of people to turn out, and maybe some of those people were inspired to turn out against Trump by Trump himself, Trump was able to inspire record turnout for himself in some areas, higher than 2016, making some gains with demographics that Democrats are used to talking about as unified voting blocks, particularly Black and brown voters. And I think one of the lessons that we can learn from this is whatever Trump stood for or whatever he inspired in the nation, a substantial part of the electorate liked it. This isn't just everyone's on the same page and everyone was fed up. Some people weren't. And the other key lesson we have here is about the enduring nature of partisan attachment, at least right now on the American right, because we know we live in an age of high levels of partisanship, even though the parties are relatively weak at this point. And we know that's asymmetric. So Republicans are much more likely to say that being Republican is very important to their identity and to view it as a social identity, which means we probably had a lot of voters who maybe hated Trump, maybe didn't like that he was a Republican nominee, but he was a Republican. And at the end of the day, that identity overrode any dissatisfaction they might have had with him as a candidate himself.
Well, Michael, you know what else we also learned? The in a year where we saw George Floyd and others killed, other African Americans killed by the police and other circumstances, we saw a more engaged African-American community. Black voters not only gave Joe Biden the nomination, you know, they rallied behind him and Jim Clyburn in the South Carolina primary, which continued into Super Tuesday. But the reason Pennsylvania turned on Saturday, actually, days after the election, the reason Georgia is turning is because African Americans said, we're not going to sit home, as many did in 2016. They were not aroused or inspired by Hillary Clinton. They said that this was too important to sit home. And I think Black Americans basically they made their case. They made their point. They made their point, and it showed on Election Day.
Black voters certainly saved Joe Biden's candidacy in the primary after he took two large defeats in Iowa and New Hampshire. But then he came into South Carolina and won overwhelmingly there, thanks to the support of Black voters, and went on to cruise to the nomination after that one. And it appears that that is also the case as of the national race against President Trump. Though, again, President Trump has not conceded. And Ken, this is probably an unprecedented moment. We've had elections that are close. We've had candidates hold off on conceding before. But do you see a danger in where we are right now with the way the incumbent president is handling the results as we know them to be true from Tuesday?
Well, I do. I see a great thing. You think of close elections in the past. You think of 1960, where a lot of people, a lot of Republicans, felt that John F. Kennedy defeated Richard Nixon because dead people voted in Texas and Illinois. But Richard Nixon said, look, for the sake of the country, I am not going to contest this election. I'm not going to put the country into a constitutional crisis. And he conceded the same day. Hubert Humphrey, in that close election in 68, he conceded on Wednesday morning after the election. Al Gore actually conceded twice. He conceded during election night and then later after the Supreme Court made its decision. The fact that the president is still sowing doubt about the fairness of American democracy and the American voting system puts, again, he threatens Americans' faith in the institution by claiming fraud, when the reality is that there's no proof of it. If there was some proof of it, if suddenly somebody saw thousands of ballots suddenly appearing in Pennsylvania or Georgia or someplace like that, that would be one thing. But this is Trump saying, remember, from the beginning, he said either I win or it's stolen from me. I can't lose. I can't lose to this guy, and I can't lose if it's a fair election. So this is not a surprise at all. It's regrettable, but it's not a surprise that Donald Trump is questioning the sanctity and the fairness of this vote, because he said he would do that from the beginning should he lose.
And Dr. Bloom, this country is in a volatile state anyway. We've been dealing with a pandemic and a reckoning on racial justice for many, many months now. We've seen several instances of violence play out in a variety of places across the country. What are your thoughts about the position the president might be putting the nation in at this moment in history with his refusal to concede?
Well, there are a lot of things here that are uncharted territory. We did not see what some people were afraid we would see during the election itself, or kind of in the, I guess now the week following. Trump put out some not so subtle calls for an army to go to the polls, for people to be armed at the polls and so forth. And we really didn't see a lot of armed clashes over this past week, which I think would have been the worst case scenario. However, as you pointed out, Trump hasn't conceded yet. It's not over, at least for him. And it's still possible that some of his supporters could get pretty riled up, that we could see more outbreaks. But there's another possibility, and I think we're seeing some of this right now, which is that American voters are exhausted. In general, even if people supported Trump, this has been a dramatic, tumultuous presidency. And people might just collectively need to take a little bit of a break. So I'm hopeful that we won't see any violence kind of arising as we near the end of this election season. But with this presidency, and as long as Donald Trump's still occupying the White House, anything could happen.
We're talking with the political junkie Ken Rudin and University of Oklahoma assistant professor in the Department of Political Science, Dr. Rachel Bloom. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Some emails coming in. Jim writes to us and says, assuming Trump will eventually leave office, I believe he'll manage to cause almost as much damage out of office as in it. I fully expect him to continue gallivanting around the country, holding more of his trademark rallies, ginning up his disciples to all kinds of mischief, and setting himself up as the anti-president, like the medieval anti-popes. Another listener, Nazrin, writes in to say, Trump claims fraud and rigged election. These voters also voted for the down-ballot candidates. None of those candidates claimed rigged, fraud, or recount. Ken, we are seeing, though, not every Republican in Congress come out and show that the election is over. We saw Lindsey Graham, who defied polls and won big in his reelection quest in South Carolina over Democrat Jamie Harrison. He said just yesterday on Fox that the president should not concede.
Well, there are two. Look, we've seen what the Republicans have said during the worst excesses of the presidency during the last 4 years, and Republicans stayed with him. That's not a surprise. I think Republicans are either sticking with him all the way, or more importantly, afraid to. As long as the president is fighting it, there's no plus side for the Republicans to urge him to concede. I mean, yes, George W. Bush did congratulate Joe Biden, and yes, Rory Blunt, the senator, the Republican senator from Missouri, said, if you have proof of fraud, Mr. President, show it to us. But for the most part, it's not a surprise what Lindsey Graham is doing. Most Republicans are staying quiet, but there are those who will egg him on and say, look, you got to keep fighting. I mean, Rudy Giuliani, of course, will do that, and Newt Gingrich will do that. But elected officials like Lindsey Graham are doing it as well. It's not surprising. It may be a little disappointing, given the fact, as Rachel just said, that down-ticket Republicans You know, if this was a fixed election, well, you know, Mitch McConnell would have lost if they wanted to steal elections. No Republican was more disliked among Democrats than Mitch McConnell. So if you want to fix an election, get rid of Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell. But the fact is, yes, there are Lindsey Grahams of the world who say, keep fighting. And for all we know, he'll keep fighting until January 20th. But at some point, with 72 days to go, he still has a crisis. He still has this health crisis that is spiraling out of control. Rather than talk about unproven conspiracy theories, he should be saying, what can we do to protect the country? And he's not doing that.
513-419-7100 is the number to call to join our conversation. Let's go now to Bernadine. Hi, Bernadine. What's your question or comment?
Well, wow, thanks for getting me on so soon. I am calling as a dyed-in-the-wool progressive ever since the Vietnam era. I have been a big progressive, and I've often voted for Dems. But when they turned around with Clinton, I went way the other way. Clinton was the best Republican they ever had. So Biden was put over the top by the progressives. The previous program said that Biden was put over the top by the Progressive Caucus. And we do know that if Bernie would have been run in 16, he would have won. So, yes, we do expect our agenda to be taken because we did put Biden over the top. And the fact of the matter is, if the evangelicals and the Tea Partiers put the Republicans over the top, that's only 30% of the electorate, what their views are. 70% of Americans, according to every reliable poll, Quinnipiac, all of them, has said that 70% of Americans want their progressive agenda. They want Medicare for all. They want free two-year college. They want to get rid of that student debt, which will put like trillions of dollars into the economy.
Bernadine, we do appreciate the call and you sharing your perspective with us. I'm sorry, I do want to make sure that we do get some other callers in. Thank you for listening and thank you for taking the time to give us a call, Bernadine. Thanks again. 513-419-7100. We're going to get to some trivia answers coming up momentarily. I want to get John on the line. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Real quick comment. I just want to say I think it's intellectually dishonest by the media to insinuate that the threats of political violence here in this country are coming from the right. There have been some, I understand, but those have been in the minority of actual instances of violence, political violence that we've seen in the streets of the United States that previously we really had never really seen at this level. And I'm talking about the looting, the major political violence that has happened. I understand, you know, we've seen demonstrations and stuff like that, but the majority of the actual violence that we've seen has come from the left. Now, my next comment real quick is that when Al Gore gave away the election that he actually won, that's when I left the Democratic Party. That's when I knew that they weren't interested in the concerns of the people, because we wouldn't have had Iraq. We definitely wouldn't have had the ongoing issues we've had with messing up the Middle East and all that stuff. I put that all on Al Gore just conceding an election that he actually won.
John, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us. We do appreciate the call very much. 513-419-7100. We've got Ken Rudin and Dr. Rachel Bloom with us. Ken, remind us what the trivia question is. We're going to get some guessers coming up.
Trivia question is Joe Biden, of course, is the first second Catholic ever elected president. He was the first Catholic vice president, but who was the first Catholic running mate?
First Catholic running mate. Let's get some guesses now. We've got Tommy on the line with a guess. Hi, Tommy. What's your guess?
Well, Michael and Ken, is it Spiro Agnew?
Spiro Agnew was Greek Orthodox. He was not Roman Catholic.
Tommy, thank you for listening. Great guess. 513-419-7100. Bob wants to take a stab at this one. Hey, Bob, what's your guess?
Jack Kemp.
Jack Kemp was not, I think he was Episcopalian, but he was not Roman Catholic.
Bob, another good guess. You can give us a call and try again if no one gets it in time. 513-419-7100. Andy has a guess. Hi, Andy, what's your guess?
My guess is Geraldine Ferraro.
Geraldine Ferraro, was Catholic, but she was not the first.
Ooh, great guess, Andy.
She was Catholic.
Give it another try. It looks like we need to go farther back than that. Thanks for calling in. 513-419-7100 is the line to call if you've got an answer to Ken Rudin's trivia question, or if you've got an answer for this country in general. Share your thoughts, your feelings about the election with us. Also, email talk@wvxu.org. We'll continue with the political junkie Ken Rudin and our friend Dr. Rachel Bloom. Coming up, you're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And University of Oklahoma, Carl Albert Congressional Research and Studies Center and Department of Political Science Assistant Professor, Dr. Rachel Bloom. Rachel, we're glad to have you back with us as well.
I am as well.
Okay, so Ken Rudin's trivia question, y'all, this time around is Joe Biden is only the second Catholic elected president, and he was the first Catholic vice president. Who was the first running mate who was Catholic? We will take some more guesses coming up at 513-419-7100. That's also the number to call if you'd like to weigh in and share some opinion with us. Dr. Bloom, I'd like to bring you back into the conversation, and I want to reference the call from Bernadine. And you're a bit of an expert on the Tea Party's rise on the Republican side of politics in America. You've got a book about this. And when we heard Bernadine suggest what's being argued now on the national stage among Democrats, even within their own caucus, did the progressives put Joe Biden over the top, or did the progressives cost the Democrats the chance to take over the Senate, losing seats in the House? That seems to be the fight. I'm wondering, from your perspective, what you see.
Well, Bernadine was completely right that even though the Tea Party was a minority of the Republican Party, they were able to exercise outsized influence on the party, eventually controlling the nomination for president with Donald Trump. So we know it's completely possible for a faction within a party to do that. And I know a lot of eyes right now are on the progressives. The one thing I would add in here, though, is just a little bit about legislative institutions. So even if Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are grateful to the progressives and really do want to embrace some of that agenda, and it seems like they do, and they introduce legislation into the House and it makes it through the House, they still have to contend with the Senate. And unless those runoff races in Georgia go Democrats' way, that means they're still going to have to deal with Mitch McConnell and a slight Republican majority. So this is a difficult thing a lot of times for presidents when implementing new agendas. It's not always as simple as them wanting to do something. Now, that said, I think we are going to start seeing a lot more of the contours of the battle between the progressives and the moderates within the Democratic caucus now that the election is over, because the nomination process is just a very, very small part of a party's negotiation process as a whole. It's the one time when everyone agrees to set aside differences, but that doesn't mean those differences don't exist. So I think the caller is absolutely right that we're going to start seeing a lot more focus on this, especially in the House. But I'm not completely confident that even if Biden wants to thank the progressives and incorporate their agenda, that we'll see progressive change happening all that quickly.
All right, let's go back to the trivia question. Now we've got some callers wanting to make guesses on the line, and then we'll return to some commentary here. Again, the question is, Joe Biden is only the second Catholic elected president. He was the first Catholic vice president. Who was the first running mate who was Catholic? We've got Chris on the line to make a guess. Hi, Chris. What's your guess?
I would guess Hubert Humphrey.
Well, Hubert Humphrey was not Catholic. But also, I should tell you, though, that he was vice president. Remember, Joe Biden was the first Catholic vice president. So it wouldn't be Humphrey because Humphrey was vice president well before Joe Biden.
Oh, there you go. An additional clue. So thanks for that call, Chris, because you got us some further information. And you can always hang up and give us another call to see if you can get back in before someone gets it right. But we do have another guest coming up. We have Margie on the line wanting to make a guess. Hi, Margie.
Hi.
What's your guess?
Al Smith.
That's a great guess. Al Smith, of course, was not running for vice president. When he ran for president in 1928, he was the first Catholic nominee for president, and he was the first until John F. Kennedy. But Al Smith, when he was running in 1928, was Catholic, but not for vice president. He was running for president.
Thank you, Margie. Good guess. Okay, again, 513-419-7100 is the number to call to join the conversation or to make a guess at the trivia question. We did get an email from Bob in Madeira who writes, "Given the continuing erratic behavior of the president and my concern over actions he might be tempted to take in the remainder of his term, I ask, is there any talk of relieving him of his position via the 25th Amendment?" Ken, I don't believe we've heard any such serious talk anyway.
Not serious talk, no. But I mean, but of course, they've been talking. A lot of people have been saying if Trump does something irrational or counterproductive, might they invoke the 25th Amendment? And one, nobody's talking about it. Two, Trump has not done any of that. And I appreciate the call earlier when somebody said that the right wing have not protested in the streets the way people thought they might, and that's very true. Can I just say, expand on a little bit on what Bernadine said?
Because sure.
I'm glad you talked about it. I know we have a lot to talk about, but I'd like to call a lot because, yes, the progressives, unlike in 2016 when Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton never truly united, Bernie Sanders and the progressive left did coalesce behind Joe Biden, and that was crucial in uniting the party. But at the same time, Joe Biden is not a lefty. He's not a progressive. He's basically a centrist. He's always been a centrist. And I think that division in the Democratic Party that people are envisioning could very well hurt the Democratic Party. You know, Conor Lamb, a congressman-elect, reelected in Pennsylvania, said what really hurt the party was that it moved too far to the left and scared off a lot of moderate voters. So the Democratic Party will have a reckoning, but we have to get past, we have to get to January 20th first.
Well, Ken, let me follow up on that with a question from here in our area, because if you live in the Cincinnati media market, which includes Northern Kentucky, you saw a lot of ads for Mitch McConnell and his Democratic opponent, Amy McGrath. And Amy McGrath was basically painted by the McConnell campaign and supportive PACs as some extreme socialist. And on the progressive left, who had supported her primary opponent, a state representative out of Louisville named Charles Booker, called her a Trump-loving, you know, centrist Democrat. And this was something that a lot of Democrats across the country are probably facing. It doesn't matter what your actual policies or politics might be. If you're running against a Republican these days, you're going to be painted as a socialist. You saw that President Trump clearly wanted to run against Bernie far more than he did against Joe Biden. I'm wondering how long can that strategy work, if it worked at all this time around?
I think it did work a lot. I mean, the thought of Joe Biden being a left-wing socialist is just humorous. Well, nothing's humorous anymore, but ridiculous to me. And yet, that was the argument. The argument was that the Democratic Party is becoming Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, while progressives say, look, do you want a Democratic Party that's Republican light? You know, I think when Bernadine called, she called Bill Clinton a Republicrat. I mean, there are a lot of people on the left who really see not much difference between the so-called establishment wing of the Democratic Party and the Republicans. So that battle is going to go on. And I think that's exactly one of the things, you know, we always, as Rachel would talk about how the Tea Party and the establishment tore apart the Republican Party in during the Obama years. I think the progressive left and the establishment are going to be fighting a lot in a Biden presidency.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines now. We've got Grace on the line. Hi, Grace. What's your question or comment?
Well, my comment is reflective of the comment the professor made about the important to remember that Trump supporters, you know, stood for certain policies and issues. And, you know, by everything I can read and determine, Trump really wasn't for any issues or policies. He was pretty much against everything. And he never really had a positive platform or policy statement on anything other than what he was against. He was against immigrants. He was against racial justice. I mean, he was against everything that I could see. So I don't think that's a fair characterization.
Grace, thank you so much for the call and sharing your perspective with us. We really do appreciate you taking the time to do that. 513-419-7100 is the number.
Michael, but he did change the judiciary, and a lot of conservatives really like that.
Certainly, he accomplished a lot on behalf of conservative politicians. But, I mean, he was criticized very recently for never coming out with that health care plan that was long promised and not even getting the wall fully built, as he had set out to do, one of his main issues. Let's go to Rose now on the line. Hi, Rose. What's your question or comment?
Yes, my general comment is I'm terribly concerned about the integrity of our public institutions with the attitude that the president currently has, and even his past attitude about the election. I mean, his obstruction of the post office to try to ensure that absentee ballots wouldn't get filed or counted. And then now I understand that there's a person in the GSA who is refusing to turn over the transition funds for President-elect Biden. Now, I don't know if this is a civil service person or if this is a executive who's outside the civil service, but I understood that this act was put in place precisely to keep the integrity of the government going in between so that there would be a fair transition between one president and another so that the country wouldn't fall apart.
So, thank you, Rose. We do appreciate the call. And perhaps, Dr. Bloom, you could help us understand the role of the General Services Administration, the GSA, and its role in the transition?
Well, I can say a little bit about that and then kind of tie it back to institutions a bit more to kind of the caller's broader point.
Sure.
So the GSA is one of many different branches of the bureaucracy or different administrations within the executive branch. And this is where it gets a little bit complicated because Trump is still the executive. So technically is still in control of every part of the executive branch. And I am not aware yet, and I don't want to say the wrong thing and research it later and be like, so I don't know yet if this person was someone who is a civil servant who's been in the GSA for years or if this was a Trump administration appointee. My guess would be the
Washington
latter.
Post reports that it's a Trump administration appointee refusing to sign a letter allowing President-elect Joe Biden's transition team to formally begin its work.
So that makes, yeah. That makes a lot more sense and I think is in the end better for our institutions. So this is someone whose boss is Trump and they are right now doing what their boss tells them to do. I think it would be more concerning if we were dealing with a civil servant. So someone who's there administration in, administration out, who is refusing to comply. But there is this bigger question about how durable our institutions are. Because even though we were the first country to really have a constitution to establish the practices of a Republican form of government, those practices are only as strong as what James Madison called ambition countering ambition. So what we need is a three-way tug of war at all times between the different branches. And since the framers envisioned this kind of tug of war, we've had a lot of changes. And one of them has been to the size and scope of the executive branch. So the sprawling bureaucracy we have right now has at different times been criticized by conservatives and liberals alike. And what it means is that the executive is a lot stronger than the other branches at this point. The other issue that we've seen come up is that the founders could not think about a country that was divided in two. So when you have these three branches that are supposed to be tugging against each other, it doesn't work so well if each of them is also divided into Republican or Democrat. So these are issues I think we're going to have to grapple with long after the General Services Administration or anyone else decides to kind of fall in line and do what they need to do for the next transition of power.
And that is Dr. Rachel Bloom of the University of Oklahoma, who is with the political junkie Ken Rudin on our Zoom call today for the duration of this hour. The trivia question from Ken Rudin for this edition is, Joe Biden is only the second Catholic elected president, and he was the first Catholic vice president. Who was the first running mate who was a Catholic? Let's get some more guesses now. We have Nick on the line. Hi, Nick. What's your guess?
Hi there. If I'm correct, I have a follow-up question for Ken, but I would guess Sarge Shriver.
That's a great guess. Sergeant Shriver was Catholic, but not the first Catholic running mate. He was Catholic.
Thank you.
All right, Nick, thanks so much for the guess. We do appreciate that. Let's go to Hillary now. Hi, Hillary. Do you have a guess?
I do. Republican William Miller in 1964.
Republican William Miller, who was Barry Goldwater's running mate, was the first Catholic running mate. You are correct.
How about that, Hillary? Congratulations. Our producer, Selena Reeder, is going to talk to you now and get your information, and we will be sending you one of those coveted, highly cherished Ken Rudin political junkie buttons. You're not going to believe it when you see it. It'll be coming to you in the mail. So stay on the line, Hillary, and Selena will be with you momentarily. And 513-419-7100 is the number to call if you'd like to join our conversation to offer some commentary. Let's go now to John. Hi, John. What's your question or comment?
Yes. Hello, guys.
Hi.
I knew the answer to that one, but I wasn't the first one. So.
Well, how humble of you.
Anyway, I had a question. You know, that Trump said he's going to drain the swamp, and I'm thinking he's going to drain the swamp pretty quickly. Now he's going to get all his crooked cronies a pardon. And how soon do you guys think that may start?
All right, John, we appreciate that very much. There is some concern, Ken, about what could happen during a lame duck period for Donald Trump, given some of his erratic behavior. What might your thoughts be?
Well, pardons are certainly one of them. Of course, he didn't just start with the pardon system. I mean, Roger Stone and others, perhaps. I mean, there's a lot of people who are Paul Manafort, who are either on trial or under indictment, he could pardon. And that's his right. I remember when Bill Clinton was leaving office, he pardoned that Democratic fundraiser who was also under indictment. And that's a president's right. Pardoning would not be the worst thing. I mean, you know, who knows what you could do? The president is somebody who lets grievances affect him, and personal grievances. And a lot with him is very personal. So he could do whatever he could do. I mean, there's no reason for us to speculate what he might do, given what he's done for the past 4 years. But basically, as we said earlier, he has 72 days left as president, and we've seen what he's done for 4 years. Let's see what he does for the next 72 days.
All right. And very quickly, just to return to the trivia question, which has been answered, I want to note that we did receive some correct answers via email and Facebook message. But this particular component of our show, we got to have you call in at 513-419-7100. Otherwise, Josh Elstrow can't play the winning bell and it doesn't make it official. So a good job showing your intelligence to us. We're glad that you wrote in via Facebook or via email.
By the way, Ed Muskie and Tom Eagleton were also Catholic running mates,
but not a long winning track record for Catholic running mates. Again, 513-419-7100 is the number to call. We've got Brendan on the line. Hi, Brendan. What's your question or comment?
I just wanted to comment about the three things that are truly, I think, are dividing our nation. I think it's by far number one is the party system, the religion, and race. I think that We're too focused on all this stuff. We're wasting our time. We're fighting over who's blue, who's red. I don't think truly Democrat and Republicans truly represent the people they stand for, and I think that there needs to be more parties, more libertarians, authoritarians. There's just not enough people representing the politicians that are actually in power.
Brendan, thank you so much for the call and sharing some thoughts with us. We've also got an email from Tony who writes, since someone brought up the Gore election, I'd like to comment that when the camel's back breaks, it's the sum of a lot of straws. My two favorite straws are first, the Clinton-Lewinsky deal affair, the second, and a big one, was the way the Elian Gonzalez affair was handled. I'll never forget that front page photo of the stormtroopers with their assault rifles grabbing the young Cuban. I recently looked up that photo and it is still really frightening. The Florida Cubans hit Gore with a revenge vote and consequently affected national and world history. And that was an email from Tony. We got an email from Ruth. Any thoughts on Senate obstruction of confirmation of cabinet appointments? That is something that would be within the right of the Senate, but typically, even in a divided period, Ken, presidents do get to choose their cabinet.
Well, I wouldn't put anything past Mitch McConnell, remember, who refused to allow the confirmation, let alone a hearing, for Merrick Garland, Obama's Supreme Court justice. But the difference is that Mitch McConnell and Joe Biden, for what it's worth, have had a good working relationship in the past. They've known each other a long time. Joe Biden was already in the Senate 12 years when Mitch McConnell was elected in 84. So they've known each other a long time. I know the Republicans will be angry and bitter, but I can't imagine them stopping cabinet officials without due cause.
And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue with our last several minutes with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Ken, thanks for being with us on this Monday.
I'm so excited. This is going to be a two-hour show.
We'll have to talk to our vice president of programming about that.
Oh, sorry.
We can't afford 2 hours with you. Or with our other guest, Dr. Rachel Bloom. She is an assistant professor of political science at the University of Oklahoma and the Carl Albert Congressional Research and Studies Center. We got a bunch of calls and a bunch of emails that I want to get to. One email from Alice asks, what is the data on Republicans voting for Biden as a rejection of Trump? And I'm not sure that we have any concrete polling evidence on that, Rachel, but we did see gargantuan efforts from Republican voters against Trump, the Lincoln Project, and similar organizations leading high-profile efforts to beat Donald Trump, even though those efforts were led by Republicans. Do you think they had an impact?
Well, the most recent estimate I heard is that maybe 8% of the vote for Biden was from people who previously only voted Republican for the presidential ticket. Of course, that's based on exit polls, which means people who were leaving polling places and agreed to do a survey. So that sample is only as good as the representativeness of the people who answered it. It's really hard for us to know at this point. The conventional wisdom on this is that the higher turnout for Biden probably had a lot more to do with mobilizing the Democratic base. So making sure everyone who would normally vote Democrat actually voted, and then mobilizing some people who just previously didn't vote at all. And we know that that certainly happened based on the record turnout numbers for this election.
But we also know that a lot of Republicans voted for Biden, went back to voting Republican for the Senate and the House. And that's one of the reasons Republicans picked up seats in the House.
Let's go back to the phone lines now. We have Bruce. Hi, Bruce. What's your question or comment?
Yes. Thank you for taking my question.
Sure.
We know during the pandemic that the Trump administration was actually paying out certain increments of dollars going to each state per COVID case. We also know that Republicans were getting hundreds of thousands of dollars per case versus the Democratic states getting maybe $12,000 per case. Does anyone know with Biden if he's going to overturn this and make it an equal increment per state for COVID case?
Bruce, thank you so much for the question and the call. I think we'll learn more about what President-elect Biden has in store soon. I believe he is to announce today his COVID task force, and hopefully we'll learn more about that coming up. We've got just a few minutes left. I want to make sure we can get some more callers in. Let's go to Chuck now. Hi, Chuck. What's your question?
Yes. When a sitting senator takes a cabinet position, who selects their replacement? The governor?
It is usually the governor. Is that correct, Dr. Bloom?
Yes, usually. Sometimes there's a special election. But if we are talking about Massachusetts, for example, it would be the governor, I believe.
There you go, Chuck. Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. Let's go now to Erica. Hi, Erica. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering your opinions on what you see as the future for the Democratic strategy, seeing how the tri-state went for Trump, and also just kind of taking in consideration the needs of the people in Rust Belt and Appalachia. Is this kind of like a lost cause for the Democratic Party? Are we going to focus on the urban cores now? Or because we really don't see Trump addressing the issues like the opioid crisis or infrastructure or internet access. And is that just going to be a void? Or is this something that the Democratic Party, you think, will swing back to in the future?
Thank you, Erica, for the call. You know, Ken, here in Cincinnati, Congressman Steve Chabot, the longtime Republican member of Congress, was targeted for defeat by the national congressional campaigns. And he was able to hold off a challenge from a very good candidate and Democrat, Kate Schroeder. You know, this is we saw the map that illustrated cities are bluer, rural areas are redder than usual. Do you think that's a trend that continues in spite of what Steve Chabot was able to pull off in Cincinnati?
Well, let's point out that all 16 members of Congress from Ohio were reelected, as were all six members from Kentucky. Look, I think the only thing we'll see regarding your question, Michael, is that there will be a new census come 2021, and we'll see. We'll take a look at what happened in the state legislatures around the country now, but they will be redrawing the lines. And while not much has changed in the 2020 elections, we'll see if there's major changes because of redistricting.
And it is the state legislatures in many cases that will draw those boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
And that just indicates the importance of holding those. And the Republicans have serious control over most of those. Let's go back to the lines now. We have Melanie on the line. Hi, Melanie. What's your question?
Hi, I just had a comment about Bernadine. Obviously, we could identify some of the violence in the streets of right-wing militias and so forth. I don't think it's fair to assume that every rioter was a Democrat. There are always people who just take advantage of a situation, and they weren't necessarily people who were serious about the Black Lives Matter cause. They just took advantage of the situation. So let's not just assume that everybody who's not identifiable as a Republican is a Democrat.
Melanie, thank you so much for sharing your perspective with us. Let's go now to Joy. Hi, Joy. What's your question or comment?
Yeah, my comment is going back to how the country will heal. I think it's really hard to have this conversation without including the different groups that got Trump out of the office or supposedly should be out of the office. But Christians in general, I think they're the people that are supposed to come up and help the country heal. But we've seen how people are completely disconnected with Christians because they feel like with everything that Trump is, it's not that people voted against the Republicans. It wasn't about the Republicans. It was him as the person, because there was a lot of people that didn't like his personality, his rhetoric, everything about him, not about the Republicanism. So I think Christians need to kind of step up a little bit and say, look, we can overlook everything and let's help heal the country. But I think now people are completely disconnected. Young people don't even go to church anymore because it's like, why do I even care? They tend to just be there suspended. They don't really have a way to connect back to conservatism because they feel like it represents people like Trump. I don't want anything to do with that. I'm an independent, and I voted for Trump last time, and I voted against him this time for that reason.
Joy, thank you so much for the call and sharing your perspective with us. Ken, we've got about 30 seconds left. We're working to have you back, I think, next week. What do you think the country looks like next week?
Well, I doubt we'll have a concession. I think the celebrating by the Democrats is legitimate and real. That's not going to be reversed. And now all eyes will probably be on those two special runoffs in Georgia that will determine whether Mitch McConnell will be the majority leader or not.
Ken Rudin is the political junkie, and Rachel Bloom is the assistant professor of political science at the University of Oklahoma. Ken, Rachel, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. You can listen to all of our episodes online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.